Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. It's fiscal New Year's Eve here in Washington and around the country. And as most of you know, the number one story is, of course, the impending government shutdown. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And we start with the bad today. Jim, as he has articulated a couple different times over the course of the martinis in the last few weeks, does not think the Republicans and potentially more specifically the conservative base are onto a winning strategy here. Jim, the floor is yours.
Sure. This is people who read the Morning Jolt got a taste of this. As the morning progresses and as we get closer to the government shutdown, I become more and more baffled by how this does anything good for the right. The first thing is that, you know, go down the list of all the things that happen in a government shutdown. Some of them are things that we on the right ought to be recoiling from, that we ought to be really, really troubled by. Death benefits to military families don't strike me as wasteful spending that we can celebrate the interruption of. The House passed a bill to make sure the military continues to get paid. It's unclear whether the Senate's going to take it up. Tim Kaine says they will. If that passes, that mitigates one of the big issues that I think is, you know, the reasons you don't want the government to shut down, i.e. every guy who's out serving their country and every woman who's out serving their country ought to get paid for it. And if they don't, this is, you know, that's what turns it into a egregious farce. And, you know, you're actually hurting real families. But even if you pass that bill, you're still looking at, you know, roughly half the, Department of Defense civilian employees. You get on the list, you know, it's not just, you know, the panda cam at the Smithsonian, you know, at the National Zoo. There are a whole bunch of Americans who end up having real grief and aggravation as a result of a government shutdown. So if you're going to make everybody, so many people in America go through this, like I keep hearing people saying, oh, it'll be like the sequester, nobody will notice. Well, the sequester, one of the reasons we fought over the sequester, because it was such relatively tiny cuts. This isn't even necessarily a cut. A government shutdown can actually end up costing us money because of the process of cutting everything down, bringing everybody back, reinstating the back pay if they decide to do that. And oh, by the way, we're not collecting fees and, you know, people entering national parks and stuff like that. We end up in a circumstance in which, but here's the thing, if it ended up in a situation where you felt like after a couple of days of a government shutdown, Obama would be more open to compromise and that he would end up making concessions as a result of that, I could see that. I could see the value in that strategy. But right now, there's no indication that that's the case. And the indication is that Republicans are going to get blamed for this. Yeah, as Mark Thiessen put it in the Washington Post, Republicans decided to take a hostage and they aimed the gun at their own head. They've decided to punish Obama by doing something that inflicts more damage on Republicans than it does on President Obama and Democrats. So I don't see why, after a week of this, the cause of Republicans, the cause of the right, the cause of limited government is strengthened at all. The situation is even worse 2 weeks from now and 3 weeks from now and for however long this is. So I am left baffled by this. And everyone, basically, the counter argument to this is, yo, trust us, Obama's going to fold eventually. I don't know when that is. And like I said, in the meantime, you're going to end up hurting a whole bunch of people, including military families, which strikes me as a stupid, stupid policy to pursue. Greg, I welcome you to try to talk me out of this.
I'm going to ask you a series of questions, like hopefully any good reporter would do. I think the arguments you're going to get would be, number one, Obama's refusing to negotiate. So why should conservatives be the ones to give in when they would probably argue that they've gone from defunding to delay / repealing the medical device tax? So they have compromised. Why is it now incumbent to them to, quote unquote, cave as opposed to Obama to give a little ground?
If we could win the messaging game, I would be perfectly fine with that. Public pressure is what causes you to make concessions. Unfortunately, barring some dramatic change in public opinions, there's very little indication that public pressure is going to build on President Obama, who, by the way, isn't up for re-election or anything. So, like, obviously, he can sit pretty, and he still, you know, his domestic staff gets reduced a little bit, but otherwise, he can sit pretty in the White House for a while. Whereas I think Republicans will feel the pressure, particularly those, let's say, the 20 to 30 to 40 least conservative, least red district Republicans in the House. Why should conservatives make the concessions? Because they're losing, right? Because they're losing the argument. If they were winning the argument, they'd be able to, you know, they'd be able to get concessions from Obama and find some sort of compromise that, you know, they could live with. But unfortunately, I have no faith in their ability to win the messaging fight. And I don't understand why you go into the fight if you don't think you can win the messaging battle.
So is it a mistake to ask for concessions at all?
I think we have a better shot on the debt ceiling And secondly, I continue to think that if you want Americans to hate Obamacare, they have to taste it. They have to feel it. They have to get those letters saying that their plans have been canceled, and they have to be told to go on to the Obamacare exchange websites and not be able to log on to the website. They voted for this in November, whether they like it or not. Now they need to get that punishment of what they've, you know, voted for. I don't think there's any way you can delay or defund or stop Obamacare when you only control the House of Representatives.
Why would there be any more leverage over the debt ceiling on this issue than over the shutdown?
People are more bothered by a government shutdown than over a debt ceiling. The numbers for the Republican position on the debt ceiling raise are better than for a government shutdown.
But the president's already said he's not negotiating on that either. So if he's not going to give ground anywhere, I don't understand how that would necessarily put Republicans with any more leverage in this fight.
The fundamental problem is that Republicans don't have much leverage. And I think you have to be very careful about which fights you pick when you don't have leverage, because then you end up in a circumstance worse than when you started. So I suppose somebody could argue, well, you know, if you decide to have the feeling of the debt ceiling fight, the poll numbers on that one will shift. You'll be losing there too, and, you know, you'll be right back where you were. But ultimately, the American people, as much as the numbers are they don't like Obamacare, they don't like it enough to accept a government shutdown as part of the price of stopping it. I don't think they would support the consequences of crashing into the debt ceiling a month from now. In other words, the American people have a very lukewarm distaste for Obamacare right now, and that's not enough to win any of these fights.
You talked about leverage, and the longer this goes, especially after a shutdown, you believe that the conservatives would lose more leverage. Others might argue, well, what leverage are we keeping if we're not going to use the leverage we have?
I think that unless you have the legislative numbers or the ability to win a media battle, and look, I mean, this is one of the reasons the 95 shutdown turned out the way it did. This is one of the reasons that most of the fights with a Democratic president lose is the president has the bully pulpit. When Bush had the bully pulpit, he used it on war and terror-related stuff, but he did not generally use it in spending fights. Because, you know, President Bush was not the fiscal conservative we wished he was.
Correct.
We can rage and fume against the circumstances that we're in, but we are in the circumstances we're in. And I don't think it's necessarily the conservative position is to charge forward blind to the consequences or to hope for the best. I think if this is played as badly as I fear it's going to, that there will be a real chance of losing the House of Representatives in 2014. Then Obama gets, you know, basically a rerun of the first 2 years of the Obama administration. But this time with probably things like cap and trade and immigration reform and gun control and everything else, we on the right have at least have a position to stop playing defense right now. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who are, you know, probably going to hear this and say, oh, darn it, Jim, I'm tired of playing defense. I want to play offense. Okay, if you want to play offense, you have to win the Senate. If you want to play offense, you have to win the presidency. You can't, you know, you have to look at things as they are instead of how you want them to be. And I generally see this, you know, the approach of shutting down the government just because you can as a maneuver that doesn't increase your leverage and actually weakens you, but it feels good. So people are doing it, even though it ends up hurting the party, hurting the cause, and playing into the Democrats' argument of crazy right-wing extremist Republicans who don't want to have any government and are anarchists and all that jazz.
All right, very quickly, on to good and crazy. Let's go to the crazy first, and that after Friday's Senate vote, the House Republicans got together Saturday, figured out what they wanted to do in their counteroffer. They passed it on Saturday, and the Capitol basically was full of tumbleweeds, metaphorically, of course, on Sunday. Harry Reid rolling out of bed probably right about now here and convening the Senate at 2 to deal with this. So for people who are so concerned about making sure that the government's funded starting on Tuesday, he doesn't seem to be showing a lot of urgency.
You say metaphorical. I think tumbleweed kind of accurately describes Harry Reid, Greg. I think that, you know, kind of is he's certainly not leading right now, is he? I mean, you know, he's basically just, you know, just kind of there. You know, a tumbleweed doesn't do anything to solve a problem, and neither does Harry Reid. So way to go, Nevada. If Harry Reid really wanted to do everything possible to prevent a government shutdown, well, then, gee, you'd think they'd be in session on Sunday. A bunch of them apparently went to fundraisers this weekend and stuff like that. It's fairly ridiculous for you to say this is an absolute crisis. We do everything we possibly can. Okay, see you at 2 p.m. Monday. That's the approach of Harry Reid. So it's one more chance for us to say, way to go, Nevada. Way to go.
And finally, in our good martini, you wouldn't expect Saturday Night Live to provide that, especially when they're talking policy. But I believe it was the opening skit. They had Obama at an event in Maryland. It was kind of mimicking the one he was actually at last week. And he was supposedly bringing up all these regular folks talking about how awesome Obamacare is. And it's just kind of this collaboration of people who either have no clue what it is or expose the faults in this system. Of course, there are many. Here's just a montage of it.
I am so relieved that my dumb, lazy, good-for-nothing son has full health coverage. We kept telling him, hey, idiot, you have to get a job to earn health care. But Mr. Obama here, he made sure that my son will never have to lift a finger to get insurance.
Quick, somebody please call an ambulance.
No, don't call an ambulance. I don't have health insurance.
What? Why didn't you sign up?
It was too complicated to figure out. I'm not a citizen either. I was born in Libya. My family came here for the welfare.
For Saturday Night Live to open the season that way shows that this thing is very, very unpopular.
Yeah, I mean, it says something about Saturday Night Live that they thought that was what was on the minds of folks watching the show. It says something they actually think that people would know enough about it to get the jokes. But also there's something else, like CNN was doing a segment about the Obamacare exchange navigators, the people who are going to collect all of your personal health information and help you find a healthcare plan that's right for you now that you've given them all the tools they need for identity theft. One of the they were doing this door to door, and they came across, you know, someone who, honest to God, Greg, had never heard of Obamacare. It has something to do with caring for people, doesn't it? This was featured over on hotair.com, and somebody had said, in discussing elections and why Republicans lost and all that stuff, and then we have voters who are, we call them the low-information voters, the folks who aren't really paying attention to news on a day-to-day basis. Greg, we also have the no-information voters who really don't know. Like, I mean, this has been like one of the dominant issues in American life and politics and the news coverage for the past 5 years. And here's a guy who is utterly, totally oblivious to it. And you're sitting there thinking, like, has he been playing Grand Theft Auto for 5 years? Has he? Like, what's he been doing to have no familiarity with it whatsoever? Some people might have heard a little more about Obamacare thanks to that Saturday Night Live sketch. But to keep banging the drum that I've played, that it probably made me utterly insufferable for the entirety of this podcast, there are a lot of people who are just only going to learn about Obamacare by living through it. That's the only way they're going to experience it. And by the way, considering how, you know, the administration needs them to sign up on these exchanges, the fact that they're capable of going through life utterly oblivious to everything probably means they won't sign up for it.
This will probably damage my journalistic credibility, but when you talk about this guy that's never heard of Obamacare, it reminds me of the scene in Dumb and Dumber where Jim Carrey's character is in the bar and he sees this historic headline of when we landed on the moon in 1969, and he just starts screaming at the top of his lungs, "We landed on the moon!"
That doesn't hurt your journalistic credibility in my mind, Greg.
On that note, Jim.
On that note, yeah. Happy week, everybody. Great start. Things are going fantastic. You know. The government shutdown will not affect 3 martini lunch. It may go down to 2.5 martini.
We'll find out in a few hours. Jim, have a great day.
All right. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.